Welcome to the Raging Rhino Podcast. This is podcast number 163. My name is John. There's always something happening, and it's usually quite loud. It's that time of the year again. Gina and I take the week of our anniversary off from work, and we take a vacation somewhere to celebrate. Preferably someplace we haven't been to before. I've been to Arizona before, but not with Gina. Gina has been to Nevada before, but not with me. So this year, we took a trip to Las Vegas, with a day going out to the Grand Canyon. This makes 34 states that we've been to together. I'll talk about some of the things that we did, suggestions on where to go, and things maybe to avoid. And as I do with my movie and TV reviews, I'm going to begin with the things that I disliked or things that annoyed me during the trip. This was our first plane trip since our 2019 trip to Hawaii. Plane trips are a necessary evil for us, even before COVID hit. And since then, we hadn't wanted to be around that bullshit for the past few years. Not that either of us are overly concerned about getting sick. We just don't want to be around assholes who will openly chastise you for either wearing or not wearing a mask. We ended up taking Southwest because they offered a nonstop option. And changing planes is something we try to avoid. Boarding the flight on our way out was exactly like it's supposed to go. I mean, Southwest was doing a documentary film on how to board their plane properly. This was how it was done. The gate agent gave clear instructions for everyone to hear, asked everyone to line up according to their boarding assignment, and we were fully boarded and ready to go in plenty of time. On the return in Vegas, there was almost no communication from the gate agent. You know, important things, like the fact that our plane arrived late and we would be delayed for half an hour. Instead of getting people to line up according to their boarding assignments, he just had everybody get in their general area, and I know for sure that some people jumped the line, including the douchebag that was standing in front of me. This same dickweed snapped at a lady for holding a seat for someone. She wasn't. The guy was stowing his carry-on a few rows back. Then, the asshole sits down across the aisle and one row up from me. And within minutes of the plane taking off, he has reclined his seat, invading the personal space of the person behind him. I know there are some people out there who believe reclining the seat is their right. But with the cramped quarters, it's become a very rude thing to do, especially if the person behind you wants to use their tray table. But it didn't end there. On the 2.5 hour flight, after the man reclined his seat, and kept it reclined until the flight attendant made him put it back about 5 minutes before landing, this dipshit spent at least half of the flight leaning forward. What the unholy fuck, you dipshit twat? If you're gonna lean forward anyway, put your fucking seat up. He had this very pretentious attitude about him, which is gonna rub me the wrong way to begin with. And there was a primal urge in me to slap the clueless cunt around. And of course, I didn't, because I don't want to get arrested or, you know, show up on social media. Next, Nevada gas prices are insane. And Las Vegas gas prices are absolutely psychotic. The most I paid on the trip, and indeed the most I have ever paid for gas, was $4.44 a gallon in Henderson. But I saw prices in Vegas for as much as $5.09. When I got back home, we passed a station selling gas for $2.68. God bless Texas. And the roads were laid out pretty confusing at times, even with our GPS helping out. But for the most part, we noticed a lot of very friendly drivers, so we appreciated that. The Airbnb that we stayed at was easily the worst we've been in. You could see where someone painted over stains on the wall. The furniture looked like it was picked up off the side of the road. There was water on the floor coming from the refrigerator because someone did not replace the ice bin properly. The auger was not set, so I fixed it for them. There were pigeons nesting under the covered patio directly outside the bedroom that cooed loudly every morning. Someone had made a feeble attempt to shove pieces of cardboard boxes to try to prevent the birds from nesting, and it failed completely. After showering the first night, Gina walked around on the tile floors and realized that they were so dirty, the bottom of her feet had turned black. In the middle of the night on Wednesday, one of the smoke detectors beeped its low battery warning. I reset it by standing on a chair and hitting the button with a broomstick. And Gina called the owner in the morning to let him know so he could replace the battery. The next day he came by while we were gone. He sent Gina a text stating that he went into the house but did not hear any beeping. So he left us a battery in case it happened again. Yeah, great, he left us a battery, except the smoke detector was on a raised ceiling about 12 feet high, and there was no ladder in the house. That's why I was standing on a chair to begin with. Not that we should have to be the ones to replace it. Sure enough, the damn thing went off again at 2:15 in the morning. I videoed it so we could send it to Airbnb. Before we checked out of the house, we ran into the new cleaning guy, the last one quit. He was telling us how cheap the owner was, and it all made perfect sense. I talked to my Fort Worth travelogue a few months ago about how you can be a better Airbnb host. Well, new number one rule, don't be cheap. The first thing people think about when they hear Las Vegas is the Strip. This is one of those things that I figured I should experience at least once in my life. And I'm glad I went, but for me it was a lot of work with very little reward. We planned this trip back in the spring, had flights, car, and Airbnb booked before the end of June. We did not know there was a Formula One race scheduled for Vegas in November, and that construction of grandstands for the race were going to take over the Strip. Yay! Two huge attractions that Gina had her heart set on showing me were affected. First, the front of the Bellagio fountain was blocked by construction, so you had to cram onto a walkway near the entrance of the hotel to get kind of a side view of the show. Second, the Mirage Volcano was shut down until December, and rumor has it the volcano will be gone altogether because the Hard Rock has bought the property and plans on removing it, so I may never get to see it. One early afternoon, we parked at the Sahara, one of the few places left that allows people to park for free. Thank you very much, Sahara Hotel. And we bought day passes for the monorail. Now, this took us down the Strip, and we first stopped at Harrah's, walked through the casino and over to the Venetian, where we walked around to view that hotel, had some lunch, and then we went over to the Link Experience, which is basically just a bunch of restaurants and shops. We went back to the monorail, got off at the next stop, and went through the Paris Hotel, then over to the Bellagio, where we watched the fountains a couple of times, gambled a little, had a drink, and walked through the conservatory, which is this area with a seasonal decor theme, which apparently was autumn fairies, because it was a bunch of mannequins in flowing dresses and butterfly wings around giant mushrooms covered in flowers and little cottages that looked like something out of a six-year-old girl's bedtime story. But don't get me wrong, it was pretty, and it came highly recommended. But having seen it now, I can honestly say I'm not interested in seeing it again, much like the Strip in general. After trudging back through the Bellagio and the Horseshoe Casino, we got back to the monorail, got to our car, and went to a late dinner, which I'll get to later. We ended up walking about 7.5 miles that day. It ended up being a much longer day than we anticipated, which was really bad, because that was our anniversary, and we ended up pushing back our special dinner for another day, that I'll also get to later. Basically, we should have gone a different day, because it was easily the most exhausting part of the trip. After the Strip, the next thing about Vegas people usually talk about is the Fremont Experience. The overhead canopy, to me at least, seemed to be about 10% really cool things that I just wanted to stare at. 40% of things that I'm sure somebody else probably thought was cool, and about 50% advertisements. There were a few live cover bands and dozens of street performers, and I have a weakness for fishnet stockings, and pretty much every female street performer wore them. Fortunately, none of them were redheads, because that may have gotten me to break. Gina just rolled her eyes at me. The bands were good, but the buildings hold the sound in, and it gets really noisy. By the time you get out of the range of one band, you're inundated by the next one. And I guess I am getting old, because even though the bands were really good, and mostly played music that I really liked, I was getting a headache. And it wasn't just the bands. Some of the street performers had their own setup going with noise blaring. It was actually quieter in the casino with all the slot machines going off. We stopped at a frozen drink place near the end of the canopy and got two really big drinks that cost $21 each. But hey, we said, we're in Vegas, yay! That would have been fine if I had tasted any alcohol in it. I saw them pour vodka into mine, but now I'm wondering what the vodka bottle actually contained. I also tried something that I had never had before, and I can honestly say I don't care if I ever do it again. White Castle. It's not the worst fast food burger out there. I'm looking at you, Burger King. But it's nowhere near the best. We gambled a little. Roulette is our game. And the guy sitting next to us won almost $800 on one spin of roulette. We did not have anywhere near that kind of luck in the various times that we played it over the week. At the Sahara one afternoon, I went on a streak where I lost 21 of 22 spins at roulette. And that is with bets that gave me a 33% chance of winning. It was just not my week. I had a lot more success in Biloxi last year. Anyway, we went to the Fremont Experience at night, but the previous day we were a little farther down Fremont at Ferguson's, which is an old motel converted into a shopping mall. Nice idea. It was cute, but there really wasn't anything there that interested us. So we walked over a couple blocks away to Atomic Liquors. And this is where I switched from things I didn't like or disappointed me to things I did like and I recommend. Atomic Liquors is a bar that used to be a place where people would go to view the atomic bomb testing off in the distance. They have a really good beer selection, and Gina had a classic amaretto sour, which was made with egg whites and mulled wine. Now, I've said before, I'm not much for mixed drinks outside of the occasional piña colada on the beach. But this was a damn fine drink, and if you are ever there, give it a try. You know, I'm just going to knock out all the restaurants I liked really quick. If you go through my Twitter feed, or X feed, whatever you want to call it, you'll see photos for most of these. Viva Las Arepas is just north of the Stratosphere on Las Vegas Boulevard. Arepas are basically Venezuelan gorditas. They are absolutely delicious. We each had one arepa, one empanada, and split an order of tostones, and we were full. This was the first thing we did after arriving at the airport, and it got us off to a good start. Just around the corner from there is Abel Baker Brewing. This is where we ended up for dinner on our anniversary because we did not plan our day to the Strip very well. However, I had a couple of very good beers, and they have an impressive list. The ones that I tried were the Gamma Ray Blast, a Belgian triple, and the Class A Detonator Doppelbock. Gina had a tall glass of their house-made root beer, which was excellent. The brewery also has food from the Arts District Kitchen. We split the elote salsa and chips. Gina had the beer-battered fish po' boy. And I had the buttermilk fried chicken sandwich. Everything was very good, and I would definitely recommend it. Zippy's is actually a franchise from Hawaii. Why Gina and I didn't know about them 4 years ago is beyond me. But they just opened a location in Vegas. Because they had just opened, there was a line of about 40 people out the door waiting to be seated. So we got ours to go, and only had to wait about 20 minutes. We each got the Zip Pack. A piece of fried chicken, a piece of fried hokey fish, a slice of terry beef, and a slice of fried Spam, all on a bed of rice, and a slice of pickled daikon. Could have used more daikon, and they needed to fry the Spam longer, but it was absolutely delicious. Truffle and Bacon was our last meal before going to the airport. Gina had a sandwich called the Happy Tummy, which is bacon, bacon jam, brie, smashed avocado, lettuce, tomato, and mayo, on sourdough. I had the ube waffles with ube glaze, condensed milk drizzle, and ube jam. Okay, if you don't know what ube is, it's purple sweet potato. And so all of these contain this ingredient. You really just need to go to X or Twitter or whatever it is you want to call it and see the photo that I put. Or just go there and order it, ideally. Oh, and by the way, if you do go onto X or Twitter, I accidentally put the wrong description from the menu on my post, but I corrected it in a comment. And lastly, Honey Salt. This is a great place for a special meal that, while a bit expensive, is still nothing compared to the Strip. This was supposed to be our anniversary meal that got postponed to our last night there, but it was worth it. I had the Scottish salmon, and Gina had the roasted Jidori chicken which were both very good, but the dessert was to die for. The Society Chocolate and Banana Cake. Caramelized bananas, milk chocolate mousse, and dark chocolate ganache. The thing was huge, and we took half of it with us and ended up eating it at the airport the next day. This was definitely the best meal we had there. Okay, we did 3 trips outside the city and another down to the southern part of town. And to be honest, I would redo any of those days over another trip to the Strip. Hoover Dam is maybe about 45 minutes from the city, and certainly worth checking out, just because it truly is a marvel of engineering. Before getting down to the dam, stop at the bridge parking lot, go up some steps, walk across the bridge, and get a great wide view of the dam. Now, I'm told that there is a free parking lot on the Arizona side, but even with temperatures in the high 80s, it was still a little too warm and a bit too much of a walk for us. But if you think you can do the walking and save the $10 for parking, then you should. We walked the full way across the dam and back. We took the photo of the plaque showing the state line between Nevada and Arizona, and of course the 2 clock towers on either side showing the state times. But to simply enter the visitor center is another $10 per person, and while it may have been educational, it wasn't something we really wanted to do. So after the dam, we went down to Boulder City for lunch, went to Fox Barbecue, which was good, but it didn't impress me enough to talk about them at length. We then made our way down to Hemingway Park on the northern part of this little town. The park is known as a place where bighorn sheep come down from the mountains to graze. We actually stopped at the park 3 different times on our week there, but we never saw any sheep, although the locals did say they had come down each day. Some said that the new sprinkler system was scaring them off. Others believed it was mating season, and the rams had, other things on their minds. But we did see some wild quail and southern cottontail rabbits, so that was nice. We then went down to the historic downtown area and took some photos of the statues and artwork, grabbed a drink, and then headed back to Vegas. But, damn it, I wanted to see those sheep. On the south side of town is the Lion Habitat Ranch, a retirement home for lions previously used at an MGM exhibit, which closed back in 2012. They're now open Thursday through Monday, 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. There is a $25 entry fee, but you can get a free admission if you go during your birth month and show them a valid ID, which Gina took advantage of. There are several lions and parrots, a couple of ostriches and emus, a tortoise, and a giraffe who paints. You heard me correctly. Ozzy the giraffe has learned to take a brush that the caretaker has dipped in paint and run a few strokes of paint across a canvas. Like the lions who were no longer wanted by MGM, or the birds that were no longer wanted by their various caretakers, Ozzy needed a new home when his father at the preserve where he was born began acting aggressively against him. Bull giraffes will harm other males that they see as a threat and potentially kill them. So Ozzy was adopted by the ranch. I do wish these animals could have lives out in open territories. But it was still wonderful to see them all up close. We bought a piece of Ozzy's art for a friend who loves giraffes and got our picture taken with him. After leaving the ranch, we drove down to Seven Magic Mountains, which is an art installation consisting of seven towers of painted and stacked boulders. This is one of those art is in the eye of the beholder things. I guess it's art in a sense. Painting and stacking rocks doesn't seem like much to me. It's kind of like a kindergarten art project just done on a larger scale. Still, it was cute, colorful, and I finally got an opportunity to fly my kite. I tried to break out the kite in our trips if the winds were agreeable, and that was the only day that I could. And the colorful kite with the colorful rocks was kind of nice. And, yeah, I guess I am saying a giraffe trained to slop paint around is more impressive than painting and stacking boulders. But that's just my opinion. I could be wrong. If you take Highway 15, headed northeast out of town, then take a left to US 93 and follow it all the way up through a couple of small towns, you'll get to a junction where if you turn left and then take the left fork, you'll be on the extraterrestrial highway. But before you take that left off of US 93, stop at the E.T. Fresh Jerky store on the right for some photo opportunities and a couple of dozen of different types of flavors of jerky, as well as other alien-related knickknacks. They're also kind enough to provide directions to the south gate of the infamous Area 51. After you're done, go ahead and get back on the highway, and at that fork that I mentioned is the newly reinstalled sign for Nevada State Highway 375. Photo in my Twitter/X feed. Stop for your own photo if you'd like, then hop back in your car, and maybe a minute or two later, you'll be at the Alien Research Center on your right. You can't miss it. It has a giant metal alien statue towering over it. Inside is more alien trinkets, as well as alien tequila. About a couple of little mini bottles to try. Write your name on the walls if you can find room, and see if you can spot mine. It's near the alien Marilyn Monroe. Back on the road for a whole lot of desert. There is a stop-off area with a lot of Joshua trees, but there's an even more impressive one that I'll tell you about in a moment. A few miles after that, on the left-hand side of the road, is the legendary Black Mailbox, which was actually used for someone's mail until the conspiracy theorists assigned a clandestine mythology to it. I understand the owner has a new mailbox in another area that the post office services, but he allows the old one to continue its infamy. When I got there, someone had actually burned some papers inside of it. And that kind of ruined the experience, but it was still a fun stop. The mailbox is about the halfway point to Rachel, Nevada, and our last stop, the Little Ailey Inn, which, again, has some merchandise for sale, but also has a little diner, which makes some decent, if not standard, burgers. And they also, of course, they're an inn. They actually do have rooms where you can stay at. They also have science fiction-themed mixed drinks. I had the Beam Me Up Scotty, which consists of, and I love this, Jim Beam, 7-Up, and Scotch. Beam Me Up Scotty. Clever. There was more we could have done, like taking the 20-mile round trip down a stretch of dirt road to the south gate of Area 51, or continue the ET Highway to its endpoint in Tonopah. But that would have added on over 100 miles one way. So we didn't do that. If you do decide to take that stretch, keep in mind the only gas from Alamo, Nevada, just south of where you turn onto the ET highway to Tonopah, is in Rachel. And that gas station closes at 5 p.m. That is potentially a 160-mile stretch without gas. So just make sure you have enough to make it. The final day trip was also the longest, or at least the most driving. We set out early Wednesday morning, stopped briefly at Hemingway Park in the unrealized hopes of seeing the bighorn sheep, then continued on to Grand Canyon West and the Hualapai Nation. The majority of the Grand Canyon, of course, is controlled by the National Park Service, but the West Rim is under the authority of the Hualapai Nation. I figured since we already give the U.S. government too much money, let's spend some on a Native American tribe. They offer helicopter tours and zipline excursions, if you like to do that kind of stuff. But their pride and joy is definitely their skywalk, with the transparent walkway that allows you to walk out over the edge of the Grand Canyon and see clear down to the ground 4,000 feet below you. My only problem with the skywalk is they don't allow you to take your own photographs. You have to buy the ones they take of you. Now, you're already paying $25 just to get on the skywalk. That doesn't include the entrance fee, which varies from $49 to $55, depending on the day that you go. But if you're already paying that much, the least they could allow you to do is take your own photos. Or hell, even jack up the price a little bit more and let you take your own photographs. Fuck it. Basically, anything you want to do, you have to purchase a ticket for in advance. We got our park entrance tickets, which that day went for $52, and each got a meal ticket for $25. You can purchase bottled water, sodas, and ice cream at the various shops on the West Rim, but for most food, you have to have a meal ticket. And trust me, I didn't see a single thing anyone ate that looked like it was worth $25, even by expensive Las Vegas standards. That being said, we tried the Hualapai Taco, which was fried flatbread topped with ground beef, beans, lettuce, tomatoes, cheese, and pico de gallo. It was billed as a traditional recipe of the tribe. We should have tried the pinion stew instead, but I think I could find a recipe for it online. Was the meal worth $25? No. But you're there, so you may as well give it a try. And you may as well get something that at least is supposed to be authentic tribe cuisine, and the meal itself was pretty sizable. When you go to the West Rim, I would recommend going out to Guano Point first if you want to do a little climbing. I did, and you can see it on Twitter, X, whatever. I think the views were better than Eagle Point, where the skywalk is. Both Guano and Eagle Point have to be accessed via buses that run about every 10 minutes that you can get at the visitor center along with all kinds of merchandise, of course. Hualapai Village is where the restaurant serving the traditional recipes can be found, and there is a bus that will take you there, but we found it was faster to just drive ourselves. You are allowed to leave the visitor center and come back on the same day. On the way back to Vegas, we stopped at a small trail that gives views of a massive Joshua tree forest, and it is definitely worth a few minutes of your time, either going to or coming from the West Rim. And of course, just about everything I've talked about during this podcast has a website, so you can see for yourself. But feel free to message me if you have any questions. To be honest, I liked Las Vegas. But I liked exploring the surrounding area even more. We spent so much time trying to get from one place to another that there was hardly any time to relax. We found ourselves rushing to get somewhere, but no matter how much time we allotted, it never seemed like it was enough. If I go back, it won't be for the Strip or Fremont or even the gambling. It'll be to see the Valley of Fire or Red Rock Canyon or try again to see the Bighorn Sheep at Hemingway Park. But as I said at the beginning, it's something everyone should at least see for themselves. You never know, you might love it. Next year is our 25th anniversary, so there's not going to be any running around to do something every day and be exhausted at the end of it. If our plans work out for next year, we will be relaxing on island time, and I will get to check off a big item on my travel wish list. But for now, just keep me away from the roulette tables. This is the Raging Rhino Podcast. You'll hear from me again.